Studio 360.
Hi, it's Kurt with a special podcast segment.
I'm up on a tie wire, flanked by life and the funeral pyre, putting on a show for you to see.
The summer I turned 18, this song was on the radio all the time, and I loved it. It was one of Leon Russell's biggest hits. I've continued to be charmed by his mix of country and blues and gospel and rock and roll. You might be more familiar with other people's performances of some of his songs, like Joe Cocker's rendition of The Letter, which Leon wrote for him.
Oh, the lonely days are gone, I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter.
Leon Russell died last week. He was 74. With his devilish smirk and the long gray mane of hair that he always had, even when he was young and until he was very old, he was a one-of-a-kind character and so American. Back then, in 1974, the great documentarian Les Blank started following him around on tour, filming him on stage and off. Even though that film was finished in the 70s, it didn't get released for more than 30 years, until last year. It's called A Poem is a Naked Person, and I talked with Leon Russell when it came out. Welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you.
So, this new documentary about you, as I said, is not new. What's your version of why it took so long to get released?
Well, I hate new stuff. So I decided I would just let it get older and perhaps it'd be better.
Aha, it's a vintage thing.
Absolutely.
But he made this and you didn't want it out there 40 years ago?
Well, actually, Les Blank is a wonderful documentarian. I kind of felt like it had a lot of coverage that didn't really have to do with me, you know, a lot of sunsets and...
There was that, and snakes and frogs and fish and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I had a lot of that stuff. It's okay. It's a good... His son tells me he thought that it perhaps was his greatest movie.
He's made some good ones, but I really enjoyed it. I assume you've watched it anew lately.
Yeah, it was interesting to see. I hadn't seen it in a long time.
I can imagine. To open up this literal time capsule that has been buried for 41 years and look back at yourself in the early 70s, what was that like?
Well, I was cute.
You were very cute.
I don't know. It's a weird thing, really. I'm kind of glad that it's coming out now. I think it's probably better that it comes out now than it would have been if it had come out at that time.
And as I understand it, you and your business partner at the time had approached Les Blank, who was this great and somewhat eccentric documentary filmmaker who had made a lot of movies about music. You approached him to make it. What was the idea back then?
You're giving me the benefit of the doubt that we knew what we were doing, and that's not always the case, but he was hired to make the film.
And did you have an idea in mind? I mean, there had been, you know, there'd been the famous Rolling Stones movie. There'd been other movies about rock and roll people. Did you have a vision in mind of what you thought it might be?
I really didn't, actually. You know, when you hire artists to do certain things, my theory is to just let them do what they do. I didn't want to get in there and get in the way.
And when you told him, nah, I don't want this to be put out, how did he react at the time?
Well, he didn't kill me. I'm not sure he was very excited about it. But
I expect not. I didn't know at the time, 40 years ago, but I read that since birth you've been a little bit paralyzed on the right side of your body. Is that right?
Yeah, I had a birth injury, an upper vertebrae, that made me slightly paralyzed on the right side, a different growth rate a little bit. And on thinking about it, I was happy that it happened because it gave me a very strong sense of duality. My left side was much stronger than my right side.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't as smart, but it just gave me an outlook into this plane that we live on, I think if I hadn't had that, I'd probably be selling cars in Paris, Texas.
And just and as you play music, and let alone dance around on stage as you did, how did you compensate for that, bifurcation in your body?
Well, I thought about it all the time. When I was walking, I'd be about 3 seconds ahead of the steps, so I wouldn't look like I was limping too bad. And that made its way into my playing as well. I always had to decide what I was going to play and then decide if I could play it. I had to do all that in front of the actual real time of actually playing.
It certainly would, I would think, serve to make you very conscious of playing in a way that most musicians don't have to be. They just go with the flow and do it.
Yeah, they don't have to think about it. I wasn't always conscious at that time, but whenever I was, I was thinking about what the next step was going to be.
Yeah, it looks like there was a lot of consciousness alteration watching the film at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you spent the first part of your professional career as one of the primo session musicians in L.A. while rock and roll was being invented. You even arranged the horns for the Rolling Stones on a song on Let It Bleed. So what did you make of Mick Jagger?
There was a guy called Kim Fowley out in Los Angeles who used to do that dance that Mick Jagger is famous for. I'm sure that's where Mick Jagger got it.
Really?
It was from Kim Fowley because Kim was over in London right before the Rolling Stones hit. And I can't help but think that Jagger saw him because it looked just exactly the same.
In 1970, you collaborated with Joe Cocker, and it was the moment you really broke big. I want to listen to one of the hits that you wrote for him, Delta Lady. Listening to that song and especially watching the documentary, I was really struck all over again at the way country and blues and rock and gospel all were bleeding into one another, in your music anyway. And in the film, you see what a great motley multicultural scene it was. Long hairs with square white bluegrass players and black people and young people and old people. It's easy to look at the film and think, wow, country music, that could have gone a different way after the 1970s rather than the way it did. As you see how music has evolved in the last 40 years, what do you think?
Well, it seems to have a mind of its own. You never know what music is going to do. I myself like the old style, you know, a little bit less pickup beds and beer and tailgating. I like more of the old-time country music.
I am with you on that. A few years ago, you collaborated with Elton John on an album called The Union, which was a hit. I'm going to play one of the songs from that album.
If it wasn't for you, I'd be happy. If it wasn't for life, it'd be true. I know you could be just like you should.
That's the song, If It Wasn't For Bad, off of the album The Union. So how did that project come about?
He was working with Billy Joel, and he wanted me to write some songs for them. And I said, well, what kind of songs do you want? And he said, up-tempo, baby. And then he called me back in about 15 minutes. He said, well, I think we ought to do a record together. So I said, well, sure. I always thought somebody would come back and get me. But Elton was the only one that did.
Did it surprise you that he was the one?
I don't know. I'm surprised that anybody remembered me.
And you made The Union, and it was commercially successful, critically successful. That must have felt pretty great, as you say, when you felt like you had been left alone for 20-odd, 30 years.
Well, it was great. I had just gotten out of the hospital and had a brain pan operation. It was kind of hard for me. I found myself falling asleep, but I was about an hour late for the first session, and the time I got there, Elton had written five songs. So he's ready to write, and I'm ready to write, and that was a great experience because he'd say, well, here's an idea, write this, and I'd write it in 5 or 10 minutes and hand it to him, and then he'd take 5 or 10 minutes and write the music, and it was the way I like to work, actually, very fast.
When you sit down to write a song, how do you go about that? What do you start with?
Well, I mean, for many years, I'd sit in the front seat of my bus. I had my computer, but I'd just sit and write, and I ended up with probably 1,000 pages of lyrics, all different kinds of lyrics. I wasn't writing anything in particular. The thing that I learned when I was doing that, I always had so much trouble writing. I had studios in my houses for 45 years, and I'd get in that studio and I'd sit there and wait for inspiration, which was not forthcoming. And I got kind of sick of that, and I said, I've got to figure out how to do this so I'm be like an accountant. I go to work and I do it and it gets done. And it's not, you know, I don't have to depend on non-existent inspiration. So I got a book called How to Write the Popular Song, I think it was called. And it gave me some tips about how to do it. And I studied it, and that's the way I do it today. It was quite a helpful publication.
Really? So Leon Russell, after 40 or 50 years writing popular songs and being a rock star and all the rest, a book called How to Write a Popular Song actually was useful.
Oh, yeah. I may have the title wrong, but...
it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I often think of life I live, and it's a wonder I ain't dead. Drinking and gambling, staying out all night, living in a fool's paradise.
You can now stream A Poem is a Naked Person on Amazon. We'll be back with our regular broadcast show on Thursday. I'll catch you then.
Someday my child is gonna catch up with you.